This is Hidden Killers with Tony Bruschi.
The jury heard a recording in it. Dwayne Keefe D. Davis described the night Tupac Shakur was shot. He blamed his nephew, Orlando Baby Lane Anderson, as the gunman. He described providing the weapon. He even discussed Sean Puffy Combs and money. He explained how Combs allegedly wanted Suge Knight taken care of. He talked about the brawl at the MGM Grand and the retaliation that followed. Then, near the end of the recording, the interviewer, Mario Diaz, the executive producer of Death Row Chronicles, asked Davis a question. You want to apologize to Tupac's family? Davis said, no. I didn't do nothing, he told Diaz. I didn't do nothing to his family. Yeah, that whole, you know, providing the gun to your nephew and rolling up alongside Tupac and saying, you know, do your business. That's nothing, right, Keefe? That's the moment that's mattered the most from day six of the Tupac murder trial, not because it's a confession. The jury has already heard those. It matters because of what it does to the defense's own theory. We're going to go through the latest in the trial. Your thoughts in the comment section on Substack and YouTube. Love for you to weigh in. And if you're not already, follow the podcast. Link is right there. The QR code on the screen. If you're watching us on YouTube, take us with you on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, wherever you get podcasts. Go check it out. Just take your phone, scan it. There you go. We do appreciate that. Day six opened with defense attorney Michael Snaft arguing that the recording the jury heard Friday from the 2017 production of Death Row Chronicles contained references to other crimes and should not have been played. The judge issued limiting instructions and allowed the recording to stand. That fight right there, no. That tells you a lot. Tells you where the defense is. Snaft has built his case on one argument. Everything Davis ever said about the Tupac shooting was fiction, invented to make a little bit of money. Davis has said from jail that he admitted to involvement in the killing to make money for his family. His defense team has argued that prosecutors are leaning on decades-old statements instead of actual physical evidence. The problem is the volume of those statements and the chain they created. Davis first told the story in 2008 while he was facing a potential life sentence on federal drug charges. Investigators from a joint LAPD and Las Vegas Metro Task Force brought him in under a proffer agreement. The proffer works like this. A suspect sits in his attorney's office with investigators and agrees to tell them what he knows. In exchange, investigators agree not to use what he says directly against him. Former LAPD Detective Greg Kading told Davis on the recording, played earlier in the trial, nothing you say can be used against you. Davis sat in that room in Los Angeles County and talked for hours. He described providing the gun. He told detectives he was in the front passenger seat of the white Cadillac and that Anderson fired from the back. He said he would have pulled the trigger himself if Tupac had been on his side of the car. He told the story again to Las Vegas Metro detectives in 2009. He told it to a BET documentary crew in 2017. He published a book in 2019. In between, details from the proffer leaked into Kading's 2011 book, Murder Rap. And later in the documentaries, prosecutors have argued that Davis's decision to go public stripped away the protections of the original proffer. The judge agreed, ruling both the book and the proffer interviews admissible. Every time the prosecution plays another version, the fiction defense gets a little thinner. Snaft is not trying to keep out a single damaging statement. He's trying to slow the flood, basically. The prosecution's witness for day six was a filmmaker named Michael Dorsey. Dorsey directed the 2015 documentary Murder Rap and later worked as a consultant on Death Row Chronicles. He spent years researching the Tupac and Biggie cases, access to thousands of investigative reports, roughly 100 hours of audio, photographs, and case files. Dorsey started following the case around 2012, spent over 2 years making the Murder Rap film, and helped write the questions that Diaz used to interview interview Davis on camera for Death Row Chronicles. During cross-examination, Snaft established Dorsey is not a detective and did not interview Las Vegas Metro detectives during his initial documentary research, even though Las Vegas had jurisdiction over the Tupac case. During the 2017 interview, Dorsey was in the room, not as the interviewer, but as a consultant while Diaz ran the session. Dorsey hit record on his own phone. His recording captured audio before the official production recorder had restarted, making his version potentially broader than the actual professional one. When he was subpoenaed, Dorsey turned the phone recording over to prosecutors. After Death Row Chronicles aired, he contacted Las Vegas Metropolitan Police about what Davis had said. He testified that Combs' attorney sent a letter to Apple TV calling the documentary defamatory, but Dorsey was never sued. He kept forwarding Davis's subsequent public statements to investigators as Davis continued talking. The man who spent a decade chasing the Tupac murder became the link in the evidence chain. He helped produce the interview, sat in the room while it happened, and made his own recording. Then he called the cops. The recording the jury heard contained Davis's account of the events and the people involved. He discussed Combs and what Combs, Diddy, allegedly wanted. Now, again, be careful here. Combs has always denied any sort of involvement in any of this. This is a recount of what was going on in the trial. He discussed Combs and what Combs allegedly wanted. Davis said Combs wanted the big guy taken care of, referring specifically to Suge Knight, the head of Death Row Records. So if these accounts are to be believed, Sean Diddy Combs target Suge, not necessarily Tupac. Davis called his nephew Anderson his best friend, his everything. He said they went to Vegas for the Tyson fight, not because they expected to confront Knight. After the shooting, according to the recording, Davis tried calling Combs' house multiple times. Combs wouldn't return the calls. Davis said Combs was trying to wash his hands of them. When asked whether he received money afterwards, Davis said no. The situation was hot, he said. Combs has denied any involvement in Shakur's death and has never been charged in connection with it. In the same recording, Diaz asked Davis how he felt about Tupac. Davis's answer, to me, he was an ignorant kid in the prime of his life, not remorse, not the language of a man crafting a sympathetic documentary arc. Diaz pushed further. Do you think about his family? Davis said yes. He said he hated that it had to go that way. When asked if he was concerned about revealing everything, Davis said the Lord had him. He helped me through cancer, Davis said. He told the interviewer he had cancer, had nothing left to lose, and cared only about the truth. Then Diaz asked the question, you want to apologize to his family, to Tupac's family? No, I didn't do nothing. I didn't do nothing to his family. I guess that's how you justify it in your mind. That's the crack in the fiction defense. If Davis made everything up to sell books and land documentary deals, the apology is the easiest line in the script. It costs nothing. It makes your story better. Any documentary producer would tell you that the man who confesses and then apologizes to the family gets a bigger audience at the and the richer deal. Davis refused it. He didn't refuse because he's bad at performing. He spent years performing the story across police interviews, documentaries, a BET series, a book, and public appearances. He refused because in that moment, on that tape, he wasn't building a character. He was defending himself against the one question that cuts through every version of the story he's ever told. A man who didn't do anything doesn't defend himself against an apology. He gives one. The jury has now heard 18 witnesses across the first week into the second. They've heard the 2008 proffer recording where Davis described providing the gun. They've heard the 2009 interview where he told the story again to different detectives. They've heard clips in the BET documentary where he said he had cancer and nothing left to lose. And they have heard the 2017 recording from the room where Dorsey was sitting with a phone in his pocket. Davis told the same story across all those formats. The details shift a little bit, the amounts, the specific people he names, the emphasis, but the bones, the account stays the same. The Cadillac, the gun, the nephew in the backseat, Combs in the background. If he was lying, he was lying the same way for nearly a decade to different people in different settings with no script. Same logic runs through the Combs account. A man inventing the story to sell writes the version where the famous person came through and the money landed. Davis told the version where Combs ghosted him, where the calls went unanswered, where the money never arrived. That's not a script designed for a payday. That's a grudge. During cross-examination, Dorsey pushed back at Snaft. He told the defense attorney that his questions were based on conspiracy theories about alternate theories of the case and asked whether the defense had evidence to support them. The judge admonished Dorsey. Witnesses answer questions. They don't ask them. Dorsey may be recalled at any point during the trial. The filmmaker walked into that interview room in 2017 with a phone in his pocket. He walked out as evidence. His recording captured a man who told the story of a killing across every format available to him and couldn't bring himself to say he was sorry for it. I think one of the other questions we have to ask, if we're going to believe that Keefe D is responsible for handing the gun to Orlando that night, the fight, the Cadillac, the handing of the weapon. The other key tenant of that story is Sean Diddy Combs. So if that part of the story is true, is Diddy's involvement true too? That's the question. He's denied it every which way. Was he a convenient out for people? Thinking, well, if we say it was a hit and it was ordered, then we'll get less of a penalty if we ever get caught. I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But I got to tell you, the alleged involvement of Diddy in this case is reaching a hell of a lot closer to the sun, a lot closer to a potential reality than I thought it was going to. Seems to be a key figure, at least being alleged to be behind the ordering of this hit. How do you prove it, though? I don't know that you can. I don't know that you can. And so the mystery deepens. Your thoughts in the comments section on Substack and YouTube. We'll continue our conversation right there. Until next time, I'm Tony Bruschi. We'll talk again real soon.
Want more on this case and others? Then press subscribe now and don't miss a moment of true crime coverage from Tony Bruschi and the Hidden Killers podcast.